On the top of Mem Ches Amud Beis, we have something called Magufas Chavis. And we spoke about a barrel with a lid that was attached to it in a kind of a plaster way. And they actually cemented down the lid to the barrel. And we allowed him to open this on Shabbos. And this was in contrast to a case of Poseach Beis HaTzavar b'Shabbos, where we said he's Chayev Chatos. And Rava tries to explain the difference, and he says, Zeh Chibur v'zeh Eino Chibur. Now, we initially understood that Zeh Eino Chibur means that the lid is attached to the barrel in a way that you just simply have to break the, you know, break that cement and rip off the lid. That means you're bringing the lid back to its original state. But Yosef pointed out yesterday that if you look at Rashi on the second line, on the top of Mem Ches Amud Beis, Rashi says, Umatiz es rosha besayef. And the implication of Rashi is that he's not removing the cement that connects the lid with the barrel, but rather he seems to be opening the barrel, or shall we say cutting off the head of the barrel, at a point which is below the cement. He's mamish cutting into the barrel itself. And it means that I don't have to tell you that the cover is just simply sealed down to the barrel and he's breaking that seal. I can even go one step further and say that even if he cuts off a part of the, let's call it the guf hachavis, the body of the barrel, he's still allowed to do so. And I think what Rashi might be implying here, and it's a big chiddush of Rashi, is that he's not creating a kli. In other words, Rashi is analyzing not the action so much, but the object upon which the action was performed. And Rashi is telling us that in order to be chayav for opening this barrel, you would have to be creating a new kli that didn't exist before. And when you have a kli that was manufactured, that was created as one chibur, as one, you know, like the cloth that is one long cloth, one piece of cloth, then when you open that area for the neck to make it into a poncho, then you're actually creating a kli. But not so in the case of a barrel that has a lid to it, where the barrel is clearly produced and manufactured from the get-go with a covering on top of it as a separate item. So when he gets an opening on this barrel and he creates that on Shabbos, he's not creating a new kli. The kli without its lid was the original kli as it was manufactured. And basically, he's bringing it back to its original state. So he's not creating a new state of a kli. And therefore he's not chayev for makom patish, or what we call tikkun mana. So we have that big chiddush. So today, we're going to start with Ramilei Rab Yirmiya. So let's see if we can all find the place. Let's see, Ramilei Rab Yirmiya would be on the second line from the top on Mem Ches Amud Beis. And Rami means Astira. Rab Yirmiya is presenting what seems to be a Astira contradiction from a Mishnah to our Gemara, and he's presenting this to Rabbi Zera. Tanan. Now, this Mishnah is a Mishnah in Taros. And it appears in two places, apparently, in different forms. One in Masechta Paro, one in Masechta Uktzin. And what does it say in the Mishnah? It seems that in the old days, I'm not sure if we have this exactly in our day, what they did was, if let's say you brought clothing into the cleaners, then the cleaner would attach with stitches different articles of clothing. So this way he would know to whom he wants to return these articles. He wouldn't have to start looking amongst the various laundered clothing. Oh, this shirt or this blouse belongs to so-and-so, and this blouse belongs to so-and-so. If somebody brought him two blouses, so he would attach them together with some stitches. And now we have the question whether or not he's allowed to detach those stitches on Shabbos. And now we have another question. In the light of the concept called Chibur, when you have two pieces that are attached to each other, then in Hilchas Tuma V'Tara, that's why these Mishnayos are in Taros, what happens if the Sheretz falls on one of these Begadim and not on the other Beged? Is the other Beged Makabel Tuma insofar as it's attached to this Beged, only because the launderer sewed them together? Now, Kovsim is the word for the launderer, and Shalal, which normally means something that you take in battle, but here it has a whole different meaning in its context. And it means Shalal is like a, otherwise known as a Shalsheles. It's a shortened form. Shalsheles means a chain. So you have a chain of clothing. Now what makes this these various articles of clothing into a chain? It's the fact that they are stitched together on a very, very temporary basis. Okay. And then we have another case in the Mishnah, which is called Shalsheles Shel Maftechos. Now, the Rashi doesn't have this girsa. There's a question of whether it's written in the Mishnah or not. But you could have a chain of keys. Then we have Habeged Shutafur Bikalayim. And what happens is that you have two different pieces of cloth. One is wool, and the other is linen. And they're sewn together, also on a very temporary basis. And here we have an additional question as to whether or not this is shatnez. In any event, the Mishnah establishes chibur l'tuma, which means that the two different articles of clothing, since they were sewn together, are considered chibur. They're considered like one entity, one item. So if, as we said before, the sheretz falls on one article, the other article, its twin, so to speak, its Siamese twin, is also Makabel Tuma. And that's called a chibur. Now we're going to have to see how that impacts on the laws of Shabbos, because we just finished saying that in the case of a posea peis atzavor, he's chayv from meleches makab patish because of a chibur. Okay, so we'll talk about that concept of chibur. And then the Mishnah says at sheyaschil lahatir. Now, what that means is, if you translate this literally, when did the sheretz fall? If it fell before the launderer started detaching or taking apart these threads, these stitches, then both are articles of clothing on Makabel Tuma, and that's called Chibur. But then he gets to the point of Mishiyaschil. Mishiyaschil lahatir. He hasn't yet actually taken apart the stitches. So he hasn't separated one article from the other. But he's begun the process. Once he began the process, then it's considered like two different articles. And Tumah is only received in one article and not in the other. Now, if we have the girsa of Shalshelah Shalmaftechos, then it's a little bit difficult to understand what Shiyaschil Lahatir means. You know, what does it mean? You have different keys that are on a chain. Are they attached? Are they not attached? In the case of the launderer, that's the ratio of the Mishnah, Shol Shol Kovsin, we begin to understand what Yaschil Lahatir means. In other words, the garments were attached only on a temporary basis, and the intention was to take apart this attachment. Each piece of material is separated to different beged. So we can understand what Mishiyaschil Lahatir means. He's already begun the process of separating the two garments. Now we're ready for Rabbi Yirmiyah. Until now we were learning the Mishnah. Rabbi Yirmiyah said, Alma, what do I want to derive from this Mishnah? Shelo b'shas melacha nami chibur. We have two different time periods. We have a time period that's called b'shas melacha, and then there's shelo b'shas melacha. When the launderer is busy doing his work, his malacha, and he's in the process of laundering these two garments, when he attaches them together, he certainly treats them as one unit. But shelo b'shas melacha, if he hasn't started to detach them, but he's finished with his malacha, so at this point he's returning the two begadim to their rightful owner, he already can separate the two. But yet, the Mishnah says that until he begins the process of separating the two, it's nevertheless considered chibur. When do they separate as two separate items, one of which is tameh and the other is tar? That's only if he begins to detach one garment from the other. So even though at this point he doesn't need the attachment anymore, it's already after the malacha, but it's physically attached. And that's called a chibur. He has no need for this chibur anymore. It's already after the malacha was done. That's called shelo b'shas malacha. Ureminu, here's the kasha of Rabbi Yirmiyah, and now he has a Mishnah in Masechta Kelim. Makel sha'asa yad lekardum. He couldn't find the handle for an axe. So what did he do? He took a piece of wood, you know, some sort of stick, and on a very temporary basis, he attaches it to the axe itself, and he uses it as an axe, which is called shas melacha. What's the status of this handle after he finishes the melacha? He attached this wooden stick to the iron of the axe, but he had no intention of leaving it there. It was just because he had no permanent handle. So he took a stick. And here the Mishnah says it all depends upon shas melacha or shelo b'shas melacha. Chibur l'tumah, says the Mishnah, if let's say the sheretz falls on the axe, then even the wood is going to be makabel tumah, but only b'shas melacha. Only while he's performing that melacha with this axe. And now Rabbi Yirmiyah is going to be medayik from the Mishnah, v'shas melacha in, shalot v'shas melacha lo. That the moment he finishes his melacha, he chopped down the tree, then the status of the piece of wood is a separate entity. It's no longer called chibur. It's no longer be mekabel tumah with the axe, even though he hasn't yet done a thing to detach the wood from the axe. So this, according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, is a stira between two Mishnayos on the issue of chibur shelo b'shas melacha. According to the second Mishnah, which is the last Mishnah we quoted from Masechta Kelim, it seems that chibur shelo b'shas melacha is not called a chibur. So as soon as he finishes this temporary chibur, in his mind, it's as if he is taking it apart. And Halacha considers that as if it was a done deal. So shelo b'shas melacha, there's no chibur. But in the case of the first Mishnah, the Mishnah from Para, there the impression you get is that until the launderer has taken apart these stitches and separated the two articles of clothing, it still is considered a chibur, even though it's shelo b'shas melacha. This despite the fact that he has no intention to leave the stitches in, and he has no use for the stitches. It's already over his mana. Amalei, Sir Abzera, gives an answer to Rabbi Yirmiyah. Hasam, in the last case of the Mishnah, in Kalim, Ishalo b'shas melacha, Adam asu lizarkan lebeina eitzim. What does a person do after he used this makeshift handle, this stick? He throws it amongst the wood, and he's burning. He's going to burn it with his in his bonfire. He still has a use for the stitching even after he completed the laundry. Why? The mitanfu hadar mechavrelahu. Now I'm going to just translate this Gemara literally. I'm not exactly sure what the Gemara has in mind in terms of the reality of it, but it says the following: that if the clothing becomes soiled, then he's going to have to clean it a second time around. Let's imagine you had a washing machine, right? Again, you're talking about an industrial washing machine. You know, one of those in the laundry mats. You know, and you'll see the big gigantic thing. So it could be. Again, it doesn't seem that practical in our reality, but in those realities, that although he did a great job in laundering it, but nevertheless it fell on the floor, or you know, somebody came in and spilled some ink on it, I don't know, a bug came in and landed on it, and he scratched the, you know, whatever it is, he may have to put it back into this laundry machine a second time around. So again, you know, there's time, I guess you call it time T1, time T2, time T2, maybe even time T4. So initially, when he gets the two articles of clothing, he attaches them, stitches them. Then he puts it into the laundry. Now he takes it out. He's about to detach it, but the owner of the garment has yet to come and collect his articles, which means that the launderer is still responsible. Because the key moment is when he gives the he gives the clothing back to the owner, and the owner checks it out, and lo and behold, it's crispy clean. Up until that moment, the launderer, the kovei, still has vested interest in keeping it together with the attachment, because he may have to put it back into the laundry mat. Says Reb Zera, in that case, it's not considered gemar malacha. This is not chibur shelo b'shas malacha. It's still considered shas malacha, because we extend shas malacha until the point where he's absolutely certain that he doesn't need any malacha. He's given it back to its owner. But up until that point, prior to that moment, it's still considered the extension, the extended shas malacha. Masha'en came in the case of the axe. He already finished his chopping down the tree. What he's going to do with this piece of wood is he's just waiting for the second to detach it and throw it into the wood pile. And he has no further use. Again, you and I might think, well, maybe he's going to find another tree to chop down. But the Gemara says that he only has one tree to chop down. Okay. Now let's see if this impacts on the laws of Shabbos. Let's see. Okay. So again, we have this concept called chibur, and if the chibur is not essential to the structure of the kli, it doesn't add anything to the kli. It's only relative to the, in this case, the Baal Malacha, the Koveis. He gets a benefit from the chibur on a temporary basis, even without changing the structure of the kli. So we have two different kelim, two different utensils, and we're attaching them not as one kli, but only for convenience, let's call it, so that when he returns the two articles, he won't have to start looking for this article and that article. It'll make it easier for him to give both piece of clothing back. And that's called chibur. And therefore, as far as tumah is concerned, until he detaches it, if the sheretz falls on one article, it's metami the other article. Besura masnu leila hashmata mishmeder av chizda bepumpedisa masnu mishmeder av kahana v'yamile mishmei derov. Whole list of tradition over here. So we're not sure exactly which Amora in which city accepted this lalocha. So the Gemara says the following: Man Tana Hamilsa de Omer Abbanon. Who is the author of a statement of the Rabbanon? Kol Hamechuber Lo Areyu Kamo. Whenever you have two items that are attached to each other, then it's considered mechubar. Hareyu kimohu. Now again, if we're talking about Tumah Vitara, then we go back to the Mishnah in Kalim and we say that since the piece of wood is attached to the axe, therefore it has the same status as the axe, and if the axe contracts tumah, so too the piece of wood that was used as a handle is kamo, it has the same status. And the Gemara is asking, who is the author of this rule, kol amachubra lo areyu kamo? Now again, you and I might ask, well, it's explicit in the Mishnah in two places. However, those Mishnayos do not quote the Shita of Rabbi Meir. Om Rabbi Yehuda Marav, Rabbi Meir he. We're going to learn another Mishnah in Kalim, and we're going to see clearly that the first opinion in that Mishnah, which is the opinion of Rabbi Meir, is that kol hamechubar lo hareyu kimohu, and even though it's a very temporary kind of chibur, nevertheless, it's considered a chibur. It's not. Now, where is this Mishnah? I believe it's in Kalim. Yeah. Mishnah in the fifth parak of Kalim. Beis HaPach. Now, Pach, as we know, is a jug. Ubeis HaTavlin, and now we have an object that they used to attach to the side of the oven. So you have an oven, and you want to keep oil in close proximity to the oven in case you need more oil. And you want to keep spices close to the oven. Ubeis HaNer, and we're talking about a ner. A ner is a receptacle that's used to put oil inside. And Sheba Kira. Kira, as you know, is a small oven. And now he attaches any of those three items to the side of the oven. And now the issue is whether or not this attachment is called a chibur, such that if a sheretz would fall into the oven, would it be metame not just the oven, but all these different kalim that are mechubar, that are on a very temporary basis, they are connected to the oven. And that's called beis hapach, beis hatavlin, beis haner. So we're up to the shita of Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says, mitamin b'maga. In other words, if a sheretz falls on the outside of the kira, or it comes in contact with the wall of the kira on the inside, as opposed to what's called avir, you could have a sheretz that's dangling from a string and it's hovering over the airspace of a kli, but that's not the case that we're talking about. We're talking about maga. So there's direct contact between the sheretz and the walls of the kira. Is all those items that were attached to the side of the kira are makabel tumah, not just the oven itself, but these attachments, the beis hapach, the beis hatavlin, the beis haner, all the above, since they are connected, even though on a temporary basis, certainly on a structural basis, these are separate utensils. They don't add anything or subtract anything from the kira, from the oven. Is metamin b'mago. That's the shita Rabbi Meir. However, the ein mitamim bi'avir. If a sheretz falls into the airspace of this tanur, of this kira, it has no impact in terms of kabbalah's tumah on any of the other objects. Now, let's just add one idea here. Of the Torah has in the parasha of kelim many different utensils. There's one utensil that's unique, that's made of earthenware. It's called a kli cheres. And in Parshas Chukas, the Torah tells us that if a sheretz falls into the airspace of a kli cheres, then it's metame the kli cheres. That doesn't apply to wooden utensils or to metal utensils or to glass utensils. None of the above. Only to earthenware. Because a kli cheres is metame me'aviro. However, since there was no contact between the tumah and the walls of the oven, Rabbi Meir insists that in such a case, anything that's attached to the walls of the oven, like that jug for oil, the spices or the neros, all these different kinds of attachments are not makabel tumah, because the avir is only metame the inside of the oven, not something that's on the outside. That's the story of Rabbi Meir. Let's just see what he says here. Earthenware, okay, kli cheres. Okay, aver kli cheres. Okay, there was no direct contact with the kli itself. So now he has a note here about Rabbi Meir, and this apparently is an overview of Rashi. Now I'm not sure exactly. One second. Oh, there's the Rashi. Rashi says at the beginning of the wide lines, Tumas Hakira, Klomar, Bitumas Ha'avish, Im Nafal Sheretz Ba'avir Hakira, V'lo Naga'a Hatuma Bidofneha, Hitmea. The Klicheres Metami Bi'avir. But Vehain, all these other Kalim that are attached on the outside, Tahorin, She'enon Chibur La, Elul Inyan Maga. This is what you call a brisket Tzvei Din. Is it a Chibur or is it not a Chibur? Do we view these extra Kalim, these small satellite Kalim, as part of the oven, as part of the Kira or not? And like any question halacha, the answer is it depends. You know, they don't have a clear black and white answer. If you're dealing with Tumas Maga, then we view these auxiliary Kalim as part of the oven. And if the oven is Makabel Tumas Maga, these Kalim will also, ipso facto, become Tumas. But if you're talking about Tuma Me'avir, where the Sheretz was suspended in the airspace of the Kli Cheres, then it's not a Chibur. And Rashi says the Gemara is going to have to explain this. So the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Shimon Metaher. Rabbi Shimon says that these Kalim are not called Chibur, and even if you're talking about a Tumas Maga, they do not contract Tumas Maga. Why? Because this doesn't add, these Kalim don't add anything to the Kira itself. It's very convenient. You know, if you run out of oil, if you run out of a spice that you want to put into the tavshil, you know, there it is attached on the side to your oven. But Rabbi Meir holds, no. Once you made the attachment, you know, you've already done the action of attaching these kalim to the outside of your oven for whatever purpose and whatever convenience you want to achieve, it's considered as part of the kira. Again, we still don't know why it's not part of the Kira with regard to Avir, Tumas Avir. We'll get to that in Mirtz Hashem soon. So this sheet of Rabbi Meir that we're learning here in the Mishnah and Kalim is very, very similar to the Mishnah that we had from Para in the case of Sholol Shel Kovsim. And we said that Sholol Shel Kovsim, until he actually takes apart the two articles that are attached by some thread and stitching, they are considered chibur. Even though it doesn't have any structural enhancement of any one of these two articles of clothing. The Gemara says the following. Bishleimel Rabbi Shimon Kasavar Lav Kikira Domu. Now, he's not going to accept the principle of chibur in a case of attached items simply for the sake of convenience. Again, what's he going to do with Shol Shel Kovsim? We're going to have to figure that out. But El, Rabbi Meir is in a Mimonavshach situation. If Kikira Damu, if we're going to say that in Tumas Maga, we consider it as if these Kalim a part and parcel of the Kira, and that's why in Maga, the Tome is Afil B'Avir Nami Litmu. The E, Lav Kikira Tome, from the fact that in Avir they're not Tome, is Afil B'Maga Nami Lo Litmu. So that's what Rashi was hinting, that the Gemara is going to have to differentiate between Tumas Avir and Tumas Maga, as far as these, so to speak, attached Kalim.
So Gemara says, Liolam lav kekira dami.
For Rabbanu de Gazur Bahu, this whole entity of Tumah in the case of Mago, according to Rabbi Meir, is all the Rabbanon. The e Gazur be Rabbanon filu biaver nami litmu. So why do they only institute this Gzera in the case of Mago, but not in the case of Avir?
And the Gemara answers, Avdu le Avdu bu Rabbanon hekera.
The Rabbanon wanted to make it obvious that this Tumah is only a Tumah de Rabbanon. So how did they achieve that goal of conveying that very important message? No one should think that this Tumah is a Tumah d'oraisa. And the answer is by making a differentiation and saying that only in the case of Tumas Mago is it Tumah, but not in the case of Tumas Shrotzen. I'm sorry, in the case of Tumas Avir. And by making that distinction, it's absolutely clear to the entire world that we're talking about a Tumah de Rabbanon. Now, what would be the tragedy if somebody mistakenly thought that this Tumah was a Tumah d'oraisa? So the Gemara says, Ki echid lo osi l'misraf alei truma v'kodshi.
The law is that if truma becomes, contracts truma, or for that matter kodshi, then halacha is that you have a chiyuv sreifa. However, that sreifa has to be d'oraisa. There's no room for a chumra d'rabbanan requiring sreifa, because destroying truma is an isur d'oraisa. We're on the chudo shel machat here, mimanav shach. Either we're going to say you have a mitzvah of sreifa, or you have an isur of sreifa. There's no parva, shall we say, no man's land in the middle. Because if you have a tuma d'rabbanan, we're not going to burn it. Not truma, not kodshin. Because the Torah prohibits burning kodshin, the Torah prohibits burning truma. And this on the d'oraisa level is not tomei. So comes out Rav Osai that basically Rabbi Meir and Rav Shimon are on the same team. They both agree that these kalim are not considered chibur with the kira. They're separate items. The only reason Rabbi Meir said it was tamei in the case of Mago was because of a gzera d'rabbanan. Rabbanan hu d'gazri b'hu. Now why would the Rabbanan institute this gzera? That's what I'd like to understand. Just one second. In other words, Rabbi Shimon doesn't have this Gzeira d'Rabbanan. And Rabbi Meir has it, but with a certain limitation. He's worried that people may not understand the nature of this Gzeira d'Rabbanan. And therefore, he did not expand the scope of this Gzeira to include Avir. But why did he make the Gzeira to begin with? On Memches Amid Beis, let me just see if I have something here. Just give me a second. Because when I was learning Kira, the Masifta was very, very helpful. So I'm hoping that once again the Masifta will come in handy here.
Beis HaPach, he says, Kli sheminichem bo es pach ha-shemen. Ah, so it's not the actual jug, but rather it's a larger utensil that holds on to this jug of oil. Beis HaTavlin is a Kli sheminichem bo tavlinim. That we knew. Beis HaNer is the Kli. Ah, it's not the receptacle itself, it's a receptacle for the receptacle. And mechubarim lekira ha'asuya micheres. So the oven is made of earthenware. So now Rabbi Meir says mitamin betumas maga. Klomar, im nitma akira misheret shenogaba. In other words, the sherets came in contact with the walls of the utensil, of the oven. So Rabbi Meir says, tmeim gam akelim amechubarim ima. Now, he quotes Rishonim, including Rashi, that it goes the other way around as well. If, let's say, a sheretz falls on these attached auxiliary kelim, then the kira itself becomes tamei. But ein metamim bizevi avir, shim nitma akira betuma shahoisa bi avir akira, afal pi shehi nitmeis. In other words, the kli cheres, the reason why he uses the feminine here is because he's referring to a kira. Kira is feminine. And that's kli cheres shenitma betuma shenichnas alatoch aviron. But lo nitmu akelim amechubarim. Fine. That's Rabbi Meir. Oh. So the Gemara answers, li olam lav kikira damu. For Rabbanan, who the Gazru Bahu, the Chachamim made Gzera to consider these Kalim as if they're part of the Kir itself, because of this Chibur. I Gazru Be Rabbanan, Afilu Me Avir, Nami Litmu, Avdu Rabbanan, Kere Kechad Lo Asi, Le Misra Falei Truma Vekodshi. Now, he has a footnote here, but I'm afraid, I'm warning you right now, that this footnote is not going to address our question. Why did Rabbi Meir institute this gzera? And the only answer I could give you is that, again, I don't know if you'll be excited about this, but maybe what Rabbi Meir is worried about is that tomorrow we have a keli that actually adds something to the kira. I'm trying to think out loud if we have such a... I'll give you an oh, now I have an example. John, you'll appreciate this, because John and I are learning Kira. And in Perek Kira, you have something called Shtei Kiros Hamat Imos Zu et Zu. And what it means is, he's got a Kira, and he attaches another Kira to the first Kira. And what he gains is that he saves himself a wall. He doesn't have to construct a second wall for the second Kira. And these two Kiros Hamat Imos Zu et Zu, which are twin Kiros, they share one wall. So in that case, we have a structural change by adding and attaching a second Kira to the first Kira. And Rav Meir is worried that if we allow for these cases of Pach Shel Shemen, etc., to be considered as separate items without Tumah, and that's certainly Reb Shimon's opinion, then tomorrow he might think that even if he attaches structurally to Kalim, there's no Chibur. But the footnote here is, he's asking another question, which I think might be very helpful for us as well. He goes back to Sholol Shel Kovsim, Shematzinu Li'el, Shechmiru Chachamim Lachshivo Chibur Le'inyin Tuma. Wow. How do you like that? How do you like them apples? We had on the top of this Amud earlier today a Mishnah of Sholol Shel Kovsim. And it says Chibur. Well, I have a question for you. To me, this is a very new question. I never would have asked this question. What kind of a din tuma is that chibur? Is it doraisa or derabbana? And I thought for sure it was doraisa. And now he's telling me for sure it's only derabbana. Which bothers me a little bit, because if it's only derabbana, what we're going to extend this to shalom b'shas malach as well. Alright, I don't know. So that's interesting. Oh, so now he has a kasha. If, according to Rabbi Meir, we need some sort of failsafe, you know, some sort of a security, that people will realize that the tumah is only derabbanan, because otherwise they'll burn truma and kodshim based on a tumah derabbanan, which is a terrible thing. So what about the case of Shalal Shalkovsin? There also, we should say, if the Rabbanan prohibited, or I should say contaminated it, both articles, then people might come to assume that it's mamish a tuma d'oraisa. So he says, Mishum sheyesh heker shetumaso mirabbanon. Ah, interesting. See, for this you really have to know a little bit more of Masechta Para. And you have to know about what's called Hazah Shlishi Vishvi, right? You need two Hazos. So that applies in the case of Kalim, but not in the case of Kira. There's no Tumas Hazah in Kli Cheres. So since there's no Tumas Hazah, there's no Heker here, that this Tumah is only Durabana. Masha Enkin in the case of Chibur in the Shol Shalkovsim, there we have a din of Tumas Hazah. Of course, we're not going to subject this second garment to Hazah because it's only Tumah Durabana. But since we don't subject it to Hazah, it becomes obvious to everyone that it's only a Tumah Durabana. The Pnei Yoshua says, Ma heker yesh bekach shasholol eno chibur la'zah hari adayin yitochin lehepach shetum osa min ha-Torah bechachamim ichmiru shelo yitaru b'hazah achas. Okay, this is a very profound Pnei Yoshua. Tana Rabbanan, we learned in a braisa, Mispores, which I believe is a scissors, shall prakim. So what you have is you have two knives that are connected with a, we'll call it a screw, right in the middle. And the question is that called a chibur? The ismal shall rahitni, which is also apparently some sort of a scissors. He translates it here as Ke'ein Sakin Barzel Chad Virachav. So it's again some sort of a very wide piece of metal, and it's sharp, it's got a sharp end, and you use it for Rehitni. Rehitni means
a plane,
but it has a sharp end to it, and it's used to clean off what do we call these things, shades, you know, in Hebrew we call them trisim.
Yeah.
So what they do is they put the sharp part on top, and then they the flat part on the tris. And apparently, they attach to this ismal some sort of a handle, a wooden handle. We call it a base yad. Now, what they used to do is, I'm not exactly sure why, but as soon as they finished using this kli, they would detach the handle. Maybe they had different places where they stored it. You know, so they had a place for the kli and a place for the handle, you know, different kinds of pocketbooks. And the braisa says, chibur l'tuma v'ein chibur l'azah. So as far as tuma is concerned, the two parts of the kli, so in the case of the tispores, we have the two knives that are connected. And again, it's called a mispores shel prakim. That's an important word, prakim. Prakim means, like for example, the Gemara has in Masechta Beitza something called a mita shel prakim. I'm going to call it a an assembly, in other words, something that you assemble, and then you take it apart. So they used to have cots for sleeping purposes that would attach one part to another, and then they would take it apart and store it in smaller pieces. And that's what they did with this pair of scissors. And it's a chibur, but it's not a chibur. What does that mean? Because although you attach these pieces and parts together, but you're going to take them apart, so it's only a temporary kind of chibur. And the question is, how do we differentiate again these two dinim? Chibur l'tuma, v'ein chibur l'azza. Now again, if you're talking about a kli cheres, we're not talking about a kli cheres. This is a kli mateches. But if we were talking about a kli cheres, then there's no hazza on a kli cheres. But we're talking about a kli mateches or a kli eitz, and they require hazza. So for example, let's say there was a dead body inside a house, then any keli other than a kli cheres that's inside the house requires hazah b'mechatos. However, these kelim, the mispores shall prokim, the zemel shall rehitni, did not require hazah b'mechatos. He says, Shim nitmu shneem tumas mes, vihizal echemeh mechatos litaro, lo nita asheni imo tzorch lahazus kam olav. Oh, just the opposite of what I just told you. I told you that ein chibul azah means you don't require azah. No. It means that both of these parts require their own azah. And we don't assume that there's a chibur such that the hazah of one part would be effective for the other part. So Gemara asks me, manafshach, I chibur hu, if you're telling me that there is a chibur, and for that reason, you're going to tell me that if one contracted tumah, then the other part is also tameh, is afil hazah nami. We should assume that the hazah in one segment would be matar the other segment. The lav chibur, if you don't consider it as a chibur, then afilu l'tumah nami lo. If there's no chibur, that's why the hazah and the tara process for one segment is not meaningful for the other. It needs its own separate hazah. Then if sheretz fell on one part, it should not be matami the other part. Amar Rava, Dvar Torah b'shas melacha chibur bein l'tumo bein l'hazah. So it all depends on shas melacha. Like we said, we have a scissors which we use to cut things, and we have an ezemel which we use to clean things. And if it's a shas melacha, is then it's a real bona fide chibur on a deraisa level bein l'tumo bein l'hazah. So that's not the subject of this brisa. But shelo b'shas hazah, is eino chibur lo l'tumah v'lo l'hazah. Now I'm not sure, did he actually take it apart? He says, shelo b'shas melach afal pishem adayim mechubarim. So he's not working with the scissors now, or with this plane. But nevertheless, he hasn't yet gotten to the point where he took it apart. This is reminds us of the shalal shel kovsim, right? He hasn't yet taken apart the stitches. Is eino chibur lo l'tumah v'lo l'hazah, because since it's shelo b'shas melacha, then he's just simply waiting to take it apart. He hasn't done so yet, but it's as if he did so. However, here on Daf Mem Tesam and Aleph, The gozer abanan al tuma shelo b'shas malacha mishum tuma shebishas malacha. Since b'shas malacha, there is a chibur doraisa. The rabbanan are going to extend that chibur and apply it even shelo b'shas malacha, but that's only the rabbanan. And whenever we have a tuma drabbanan, then we make that distinction between tuma and azah. It's azah b'shas malacha. Mishum azah shelo b'shas malacha. Ah, so now he's saying, let's go back to the Braisa, and the Braisa says that what is ein chibur l'azah? Ah, ein chibur l'azah. So Rav is saying that the ein chibur l'azah is going to be shelo b'shas malacha. All right, so Rabosai, Belineh, that tomorrow, I see we're running out a little bit of time here, so tomorrow we'll go over this last piece of Rava, Belineh, there, and then we'll go on to back to the Hazah, back to Atmana Sugya, in order to finish up the Mishnah. So Belineh, that tomorrow, we'll start the new Mishnah. Okay, then.